ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ, ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ, ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯಂ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಂ ಉದಿರಯೇತ್ ನಾಷ್ಟಪ್ರಯೇಷು ಅಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವೆಯ ಭಾಗವತಿ ಶ್ಲೋಕೆ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕಿ. Today we are going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, entitled The Glories of Devotional Service, text number 44. Etavaneva lokesmin pumsam neshreya sodayah ತಿವ್ರೇನಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯೋಗೇನಾ ಮನೋಮಯಿ ಅರ್ಪಿತಂ ಸ್ಥಿರಂ ಏತವಾನೇವ ಲೋಕೇಸ್ಮಿನ್ ಪುಂಸಂ ನಿಹಶ್ರಯ ಸೋದಯಃ ತಿವ್ರೇನಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯೋಗೇನಾ ಮನೋಮಯಿ ಅರ್ಪಿತಂ ಸ್ಥಿರಂ ಏತವಾನೇವ ಲೋಕೇಸ್ಮಿನ್ ಪುಂಸಂ ನಿಹಶ್ರಯ ಸೋದಯಃ ತಿವ್ರೇನಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯೋಗೇನಾ ಮನೋಮಯಿ ಅರ್ಪಿತಂ ಸ್ಥಿರಂ. ವರ್ಡ್ ಬೈ ವರ್ಡ್ ಮೀನಿಂಗ್, ಏತವಾನ್ ಏವ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಸೋ ಫಾರ್ ಲೋಕೇ ಅಸ್ಮಿನ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್ ಪುಂಸಂ ಆಫ್ ಮೆನ್ ನಿಯಶ್ರೇಯಸ ಫೈನಲ್ ಪರ್ಫೆಕ್ಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಲೈಫ್ ಉದಯ ದ ಅಟೈನ್ಮೆಂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ತೀವ್ರೇನ ಇಂಟೆನ್ಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯೋಗೇನ ಬೈ ಪ್ರಾಕ್ಟಿಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಡಿವೋಷನಲ್ ಸರ್ವಿಸ್ ಮನ mind mayi in me arpitam fixed stiram steady. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Therefore persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in the intensive practice of devotional service. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. We'll read the verse together, the translation together. Therefore persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord, engage in the intensive practice of devotional service. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here the words mano mayi arpitam, which means the mind being fixed on me, are significant. One should fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna or his incarnation. To be fixed steadily in that freedom is a way of liberation. Ambarish Maharaj is an example. He fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. He spoke only on the pastimes of the Lord. He smelled only the flowers and tulsi offered to the Lord. He walked only to the temple of the Lord. He engaged his hands in cleaning the temple. He engaged his tongue in tasting the foodstuffs offered to the Lord. And he engaged his ears for hearing the great pastimes of the Lord. In that way, all his senses were engaged. First of all, the mind should be engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord very steadily and naturally. Because the mind is the master of the senses, when the mind is engaged, all the senses become engaged. That is Bhakti Yoga. Yoga means controlling the senses. The senses cannot be controlled in the proper sense of the term. They are always agitated. This is true also with a child. How long can he be forced to sit down silently? It is not possible. Even Arjuna said, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna. The mind is always agitated. The best course is to fix the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. Mano mai arpitam stiram. If one seriously engages in Krishna consciousness, that is the highest perfectional stage. All Krishna conscious activities are on the highest perfectional level of human life.
ஞானஞ்சனா சலாக்கிய சாட்சூர் உண்மிலித்தம் ஏன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குருவே நம. ஸ்ரீ சைத்தன்ய மனோபிஷ்டம் ஸ்தாபித்தம் ஏன பூதலி ஸ்வயம் ரூப கதாமயம் ததாதி ஸ்வபதாந்திகம். வந்தேஹம் ஸ்ரீ குரோஷு யுத்துபாத கமலம் ஸ்ரீ குரும் வைஷ்ணவம்ச ஸ்ரீரூபம் சக்கரஜாத்தம் சகனா ரகுநாதன்வித்தம் தம்சஜீவம் சத்வைத்தம் சவதூத்தம் பரிஜனா சைத்தம் கிருஷ்ண சைத்தன்ய தேவம் ஸ்ரீராதா கிருஷ்ண பாதான் சகனா லலிதா ஸ்ரீ விசாகா அன்வித்தம் ச பாஞ்சாக்கல்புத்ருபேச்சோ பாவனிபியோ வைஷ்ணுபியோ நமோ நம. ஹே கிருஷ்ணா கருணா சிந்தோ தீனபந்தோ ஜகத்பதி கோபேஷா கோபிகா காந்தா ராதா காந்தா நமஸ்துதி தாப்த கஞ்சன கௌரங்கி ராதே விருந்தாவனேஷ்ணி ரிஷபானுசுதே தேவி பிரணமாமி ஹரிப்ரியே. ஜெய் ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ணா சைத்தன்யா பிரபு நித்யானந்தா ஸ்ரீ அத்வைத கதாதா ஸ்ரீவாசாதி கௌரபக்தவிருந்தா. ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா 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 ஹரே ஹரே, ஹரே ராமா ஹரே ராமா ராம ராமா ஹரே ஹரே. ஏத்தவான் ஏவ லோகேஸ்மின் பும்சம் நேர்ஷ வசோதேஹ திவ்ரேனா பக்தி யோகேனா மனோமயி அர்ப்பிதம் ஸ்திரம். தேர்ஃபோர் பர்சன்ஸ் ஹூஸ் மைண்ட்ஸ் ஆர் ஃபிக்ஸ்ட் ஆன் த லார்ட் என்கேஜ் இன் த இன்டென்சிவ் ப்ராக்டிஸ் ஆஃப் டிவோஷனல் சர்வீஸ். That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. This is my first Bhagavatam class, so please bear with me if I make a lot of mistakes. Prabhupada in this purport summarizes saying that perfection of life can be achieved only by intense devotional service. And intense devotional service is possible only by fixing the mind on Krishna. This is the final verse of this chapter, of chapter 44, entitled The Glories of Devotional Service. And the conclusion, the last verse says that intense devotional service is possible, which is necessary if you want to attain perfection, but that is possible only if we fix the mind on Krishna. The concept of mind is very unique to the Vedic Vedic civilization, I would say. There is a concept of devil in the other religions. The concept of devil is there is a devil which is as powerful as God, and that crosses all the problems. Now, we don't have that concept of devil. There is no concept of devil in the Vedic scriptures. Instead, we have the concept of the mind. The mind is the devil. The mind is the one which comes between us and Krishna. So, in Bhagavad Gita, in especially in chapter 6, there's a lot of discussion about the mind. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj says in one of his lectures, there are two dogs within us. There are two dogs which are within us. One dog is the mind. and the other dog is the, which is the other dog? The other dog is our intelligence. So Krishna has given us two faculties. One is the mind and one is the intelligence. And we have to choose which one will bark louder. The one which barks louder is the one which will take us back to Godhead. So in this purport, Prabhupada very nicely says that first of all, the mind should be engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord very steadily and naturally. Now, when I first read the purport of this for this class, in fact, there was a tragedy as far as I go for this class. I thought I'm going to speak the next chapter, first verse. And I thought, okay, that is a subject matter which I'm a little more familiar with. I'll speak about that. But then I came to know that that I have to speak on this verse. So I had to prepare for this. So when I first read this purport, it didn't occur to me. I just read it. And this particular sentence, first of all, the mind should be engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord very steadily and naturally. Now, Prabhupada is saying it should be very steady and naturally. Now, where it doesn't naturally happen to us. So it is so difficult to come to natural state of fixing the mind on the Lord. But then in the same purport, he then says the mind is sanchalam. He also says the mind is very... So what is Prabhupada saying here? He is saying that the mind is chanchalam, but the goal should be that the mind should become steady and natural. So that is the goal. Now, when does the mind become natural? In fact, what happens is, in the beginning stage of the two dogs, the mind and the intelligence, the mind is more louder. The intelligence is not so loud. So in the beginning stages, the only instrument we have to control this dog, which is the mind, is the intelligence. We don't have no other instrument we have in the beginning stage to control this mind. Either it is our own intelligence or it is borrowed intelligence. Where do we borrow that intelligence from? From the guru. So we borrow the intelligence from the guru, or it is our own intelligence by which we have to control this dog. But then we come to a state when it is, when the dog becomes the friend of the mind. Or the mind becomes the friend of the intelligence. That stage is when we have developed love of God. Then also the mind gets absorbed. So the mind from the struggling state comes to the absorption state. In the initial stage, by the use of the mind, by the use of the intelligence, we have to control this mind. But in the later stages, when we have developed love for God, then automatically the mind focuses on God. It fixes the mind on the Lord's feet. So that is what Prabhupada says here. First of all, the mind should be engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord very steadily and naturally. And then he says, it is chanchalam, but by practice. And then Krishna, so we'll take this purport and then try to see how to understand this what Prabhupada is saying a little more deeply. The one fact that comes out when we read the Bhagavad Gita is that whatever be the yoga process we do, the mind has to be controlled. That much is very clear. The mind has to be controlled. Without controlling the mind, there is no spiritual progress. And if you look at Bhagavad Gita, we find that the only way to control the mind, because that is a universal question, everybody wants to know how to control the mind. The only way to control the mind, as far as Bhagavad Gita goes, is through Bhakti Yoga. That is the only way by which we can control the mind. Because Krishna says in chapter 6, in verse 33, when Krishna has talked about how to control the mind through Ashtanga Yoga, or what you call Dhyana Yoga, Arjuna says it is not possible. It is very difficult. That he says it in 6.33, he says that. Then in 2 verses later on, Krishna acknowledges, he feels compassionate for Arjuna and says, yes, it is difficult to control the mind, but through practice and through detachment, you can control it. He doesn't give any particular process at that time. And then when it comes to the end of the chapter in chapter 6, Krishna says, of all the yogis, the best yogi is the one who fixes the mind on me. That he says in 6.47. And then in 7.1, which is that verse is almost similar to this particular verse, where Krishna says that through bhakti yoga you can fix the mind. That he says in 7.1. And then if you go further, in 8.14 or 15, I think it is 8.15, where Krishna says, it is very easy to control the mind. And he says, you can attain me very easily. Sulabha, he says, very easily you can attain if you practice bhakti yoga by fixing the mind on me. So we see that it is through bhakti yoga we can fix the mind. If you compare the other processes and the process of bhakti yoga, we can compare it to an analogy. The mind is like the mind comes with a default situation. The default situation of the mind is it is diseased. It comes with that situation. When we come itself, we come with a mind which is diseased. Now there are various therapies for curing the disease. The other yoga process, they try to cure this disease by themselves. They administer the machine, the medicine by themselves. Whereas in bhakti yoga, what we do is we acknowledge that there is a disease, but then we go to a competent doctor. We don't take the medicine ourselves. We go to a doctor to cure the disease. And that competent doctor is Krishna. So by going to a competent doctor, we are able to fix the disease instead of relying, taking the medicine ourselves. So that is why bhakti yoga is the only way by which we can cure the disease of the mind. In fact, in the same chapter, in 6.34, Krishna, there are three describers of the mind. It says the mind is mad, it is very strong, and it is very obstinate, very stubborn. These are three characteristics of the mind. It is crazy, it is strong, and it is obstinate. Now imagine with these three characteristics and sanchalam, how difficult it is to control the mind. I remember reading somewhere about Prabhupada saying that there was a person who was convicted and brought to a court, and he was declared as some mental case, and a psychiatrist was called to give witness to say whether this man is mentally sane or not. So the psychiatrist came, took the oath, and then looked at the judge and said, Your Honor, in my 25 years of experience as a psychiatrist, I can say that whomever I have met, I find that everybody is crazy. It is not that only this person is crazy. Everybody is crazy. So that confirms this particular verse's message that the mind is crazy. And in Kali Yuga, this sanchalam, this flickering thing gets aggravated, because one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga is, it is one of the characteristics, it is disturbed, no? Very disturbed. What is the Sanskrit word for that? Dhritaya. dhritaya. Upadhritaya. Upadhrita. Yeah. So it is very disturbed. So you can imagine in Kali Yuga, the mind gets, there is very big problem of controlling the mind. That problem is further aggravated because of technology. Technology aggravates it further. Because there is a very, the nature of the mind is to act very impulsively. Now, before technology, when we had to act impulsively, we did not have the resources to act on that. The mind was impulsive, but we did not have the resources to act on this impulse. But today, technology has made it easy for us to act on impulse. That is what technology has done. Take the case of some children in the US. Yes, there was some impulsive behavior, but because they had access to the guns, they can immediately act on that impulse and shoot children in the school. Now, you might say that why should we blame the gun? We should blame the children. It is true, the children had to be blamed. But if that facility was not there immediately available, they would not have shot the children. So today's technology has made us to act on that impulse very easily. I find that very true of mobile phones. And the worst of this is this WhatsApp. This WhatsApp message, what it does is it confirms and builds and strengthens the inherent characteristic of the mind, which is chanchalam. The inherent characteristic of the mind is chanchalam, but every time we respond to a WhatsApp, it is like we are strengthening the muscle of impulse. Because that is what is happening. My mobile phone can take me all over the globe. My mind can take me everywhere. So technology has made it very, very difficult for us to control the mind. In fact, there are people who impulsively shop. They have shopping habits. They want to just go spend time in a shopping mall, but they see something and they want to buy something. Now, okay, that is an impulse which is there. But what has happened is that impulse has got strengthened by credit cards. That technology of credit card, that even though in my pocket there is no money, if I have a credit card, I can immediately execute that impulse by using credit card. So we see how technology has really strengthened this sanchalam. This sanchalam aspect is very important, and we must become very aware of this, that the mind is very flickering. Now, what can we do about it? There are three things which we can do every time when we want to act, when we want to do something. We can ask three questions to ourselves. One of the questions which you can ask is, first, we must bring our consciousness to where we are, to the present. So ask the question, what am I doing? By asking that one question, what am I doing, from wherever the mind is, it will come back to the present. So we can ask that question, what am I doing? The next question which we can ask is, why am I doing? That helps us to understand the purpose of what we are doing. It brings us to the purpose. There is a purpose. So we become aware of the purpose. The third thing which we should ask is, how am I doing? Now, this is very, very, these three questions help me, especially when I sit down before chanting. Before chanting, if we ask these questions, what am I doing? Then you bring yourself first to the thing, I am going to chant. So first become aware. Before we can become Krishna consciousness, we must become conscious of our consciousness. So first ask this question, what am I doing? Then ask the question, why am I doing? Why am I chanting? If we ask this question, why am I chanting, very consciously, we will be prepared for the next question's answer. Why am I chanting? That question, at least I answer it by saying to myself, I am chanting because I want to control my mind. I don't say that I want to chant because of love of God. That is too far for me. That is too far. I first want to control this mind. Before I can do that, I cannot think about love of God. So the question is, so why am I chanting? And that, answering that question, I answer that question by saying, I'm chanting because I want to control my mind. And then the next question is, how am I chanting? I then ensure that my mobile phone is not there. Okay? I sit straight. So make myself, prepare myself before the action of how am I chanting? Because otherwise, if we have our mobile phone or have our TV or the internet or whatever it is, then we cannot chant. So create an environment conducive for doing the action and then start chanting. I find that the quality of chanting can be very good. So these three questions are very useful from my personal point of view, from the point of view of controlling this chanchalam aspect of the mind. Srila Prabhupada has given us a wonderful process by which he says, chant in the morning. And chanting is one of the best ways by which we can fix the mind on Krishna. Very nicely Prabhupada said that, he has said in this purport that once you fix the mind on Krishna, then all other senses will follow, which is very true. If we first fix the mind through chanting in the morning and then do all our services, the quality of our services, everything becomes very easy. So, in fact, I read somewhere that of all the processes of devotional service, chanting is the purest form of devotional service. Is the purest form of devotional service. Why? Because, say for example, there is a service of, I want to do aarti, or I want to do cooking, or I want to give a class like this. There is an unsaid hidden motive that I should be the attractive person in this process. When I do aarti, I must do the best so that everybody appreciates me in some way, somewhere that is there. When I give a class, everybody should be able to appreciate that. Or when I do a cooking, everybody should be able to come and say that. So somewhere that ego's desire is there. However small it is there. But when it comes to chanting, it is only between you and Krishna. Nobody else knows about it. So there is no opportunity for the ego to enter into that process. In all other services, the element of ego enters into in a very subtle form, unless it's a very, very elevated devotee. I'm saying a person like me, that the ego enters into that service process in all other services. But in the process of chanting alone, it is only between us and Krishna. Nobody else knows how that service was executed. And hence, it is the most purest form of devotional service. There is one question which some devotees ask me, because I have a lot of gray hair. Some devotees come and ask me some questions, especially some new people. They'll ask me the question, which is important, quantity or quality? In fact, yesterday I got a call from one devotee who was coming to the temple, but he is not coming nowadays. He was chanting 16 rounds. He was coming for Mangalarti, but now he is not able to come. So about a week ago, he rang me up and asked me, Prabhu, I am having problems. I am going to work. I am not able to chant 16 rounds. Do you think I can reduce my rounds? I know his history, and I knew the purpose of his question. I didn't want to tell him that, no, you must chant 16 rounds, you must not reduce it. I didn't want to tell him that because I know that will not be a very effective thing for him in the long run. So I told him, okay, if you can't do 16, do at least 10 rounds in a day. This is about 2 weeks ago. Yesterday he came, yesterday he rang me up and said, Prabhu, I am not able to chant. I have to do my cooking. I have to do this. I have to do this. What if I don't chant for a few days? Will Krishna get very angry with me? So I said, no, Krishna will not get angry with you. Why should Krishna get angry with you? It is for your benefit you are chanting. And then he said, what happens if I don't chant? I said, nothing will happen. Time will tell you what will happen, I told him. Then he asked me, okay, what is your opinion? I told him, no, I think you should chant at least at 8 rounds or 10 rounds of chanting you must do. That is very important. Don't give up chanting. So the reason why I said this is people ask this question whether quantity is important or quality is important in chanting. Yes, quality is important, but I personally think first quantity is important. Quantity brings about the discipline of spending 2 hours for Krishna every day. Okay. First quantity is important. Chant that 16 rounds. That brings about discipline that I will give 2 hours every day for Krishna. Once you have done that, then by the small purification which happens during the process, then you will find that there's a small taste and the eagerness for chanting will come slowly. That eagerness will bring about quality improvement in the quality. So quality chanting, the quality of chanting will come when the desire saying that I want to chant because I want to control my mind. When that desire, when we see that relationship between chanting and controlling the mind, then that desire will help us to improve the quality of chanting. So in the beginning, our focus is not on the quality, but on quantity. 16 rounds I must do. I must spend 2 hours. Then we think about, anyway, I'm spending 2 hours every day, whether I chant qualitatively good or not. And then we will focus on quality. So personally, that is my experience or at least I've spoken to some people and I've listened to some people that first, quantity of chanting is first try to fix the mind on Krishna by spending the 2 hours, the discipline of, that is called what Krishna says in chapter 6, where he says practice and detachment. Practice, just sit down 2 hours and practice. Okay. And then the quality will come. Anyway, these are some of the thoughts about this particular verse. As I told you that I was not ready for this particular verse. I was thinking of giving a class for something else. But since I did some reading for this next chapter 26, which is essentially talking about Sankhya philosophy, creation, I just want to share some thoughts. Because when I read Prabhupada's purport for this first verse, I really could appreciate the depth of Prabhupada's purports. I should be very honest here to say that I used to just read the purports but not deeply think about certain words. When I read this particular purport, there is one particular verse which Prabhupada says, which I will talk about, and that gave me the idea to talk a little about for today's class, about what is the connection between chapter 25 and chapter 26. Chapter 25 is talking about the glories of devotional service. And chapter 26 is talking about creation, fundamental principles of material nature. So I was trying to think, how does these two chapters, after devotional service, why is it going to creation? And Prabhupada's purport gave me the hint for that. Prabhupada says, when he talks about this chapter, he says, this chapter on creation he uses a very interesting word, the science of devotional service. Now, science is to do with analysis, analytical thing. And devotion is all to do with emotions. So how does Prabhupada combine these two words, science of devotional service? And that is where the greatness of Prabhupada is. From what Prabhupada is trying to say is that from knowledge, you should come to devotion. Knowledge should lead you to devotion. And that is why he is calling this chapter, which is on Sankhya philosophy, on creation, he is calling it the science of devotional service. That is, knowledge should lead you to devotion. Sat, Chit and Ananda. Chit should lead to Ananda. Knowledge should lead to experience. And that is what Prabhupada is saying in this purport, which was very, very appealing. So, I was thinking, how does knowledge of creation help in devotion?
Because we differentiate between spirit and matter. Then you can know how to do the actions and everything you need to. And that's not easy. It's easy to say it, but it's not actually easy. Because it has many subtle aspects which are not clear cut.
Yeah, very good, very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. But creation is also studied by scientists. They are studying matter very deeply. The origins of the universe, from where things come from. And they are also studying. So how does creation, why is creation for them not giving devotion? The difference between they studying creation and we studying creation, there is one difference. That is why chapter 25, the glories of devotional service, comes first and then comes creation. Because we know the purpose of creation. They study creation as creation, but we understand the purpose of creation. We understand that the purpose of creation is, what is the purpose of creation? The purpose of creation is to know that this is not the place where I should be. The purpose of creation is to know that this place is a hospital for treatment and I must go back to my home. So once we know the purpose of creation, then we know how to use the creation. And that is what is lacking with the, as you said, by knowing between difference between matter and spirit, we know that my identity is spirit and this is not the place where I should be. So that is one advantage of studying about creation. That is this. So there is a bridge between devotion and creation by knowing the purpose of creation. Any other ways by which creation can help in devotion? When you study creation, you also will realize how compassionate the Lord is. He has given us free will, but free will has no meaning if there is no choice. There must be at least two for meaningful execution of free will. There must be at least two. There must be choice. So he has given us a choice of saying you can be either in the spiritual world or in the material world. Otherwise, free will has no meaning. The compassionate aspect of the Lord comes out by studying creation. any other way by which, why creation will lead to devotion? Very nice, yes, very nice, yes. By studying creation, we understand the greatness of the Lord. Because if you study creation deeply, you will find that from one single substance, so many varieties come. The three modes is nothing but one substance which can exist in three states. It can exist in three states. And it is those permutation combinations of those three states causes all the variety. That means, what does it mean? An apple and an orange are different. But the apple is made up of the same substance and the orange is also made up of the same substance. Isn't that a mystery? Fire and water are diametrically opposite, but they are made of the same substance. Isn't that the greatness of God? We really start appreciating God by understanding creation deeply. The three modes are nothing but the three states. Just like, for example, this is an example which I keep in my mind to understand modes. Water can exist in three states. Water, ice, and vapor. It is the same substance, water, but it can exist in three states. Liquid, solid, and gas. Similarly, the material energy, which is Prakriti, can exist in three states. In sattvic state, rajasic state, and tamasic state. That is what the three modes are. So the three modes are nothing but the existence of one substance in three states. And through this permutation combinations of these three states, the entire world's variety which we see is made. This wall is made up of three modes. This one is made up of three modes. My body is made up of three modes. My mind is made up of three modes. So you will appreciate the greatness of God by studying the three modes, by studying creation. Any other thing by which we can appreciate the link between creation and devotion? This today's topic about chanchalam also, we can relate to it to the creation. Because we find when we study creation, the material energy's three modes are continuously in a flux, continuously changing. The three modes are continuously changing. So the mind is also made up of the three modes. And that is why it is continuously in chanchalam. We go from sattvaguna to rajaguna to tamaguna because the mind is continuously fluctuating. So that is another way by which we can appreciate. Any other way by which we can link creation and devotion?
We can utilize ourselves.
Very good. Yes, we can use whatever is available with us. We can use it in Krishna service. That is very nice. Very true. Very true. Any other aspects? That is true, Madhi. Yes.
Creation is Lord's energy as well.
Creation is Lord's energy as well. Yes. Very good. Yes. In fact, when people ask, where is God? Can you show me God? It is like asking, where is the author of the book in the book? The author of the book is outside the book. The characters and other things are inside the book, but the author is outside the book. So when you study creation, we say that God is outside the creation and the world is a thing which has been created by him. So we start appreciating, we understand why when people ask where is God within the world, he is not within the world, he is the author of the book, so he is outside the material world. One more thing which we understand when we study creation and when we study devotion is that we understand, we start appreciating the law of karma. How do we understand, appreciate the law of karma? The law of karma says cause and effect. For every action, there is a reaction. And we see, when we study creation again, we see our Mahaprabhu's philosophy is Parinamavada. That means it's a continuous chain of cause and effects. Creation is nothing but a chain of cause and effects. So the whole world, the entire material universe is a chain of cause and effects. Parinamavada, they say. So we can understand the law of karma. If you do an action, there is a reaction. So the fundamental belief in the law of karma gets strengthened by studying creation. Okay, yes. And there's another important thing when we study creation, which we appreciate very much, is our faith increases when you study creation. When you study deeply creation, because when you study creation, we find that science is confirming what our scriptures have said. How? For example, if you take, science has now found virtual reality. Now, virtual reality is, for example, when you play games, that's also virtual reality. But virtual reality is also used in professionals. For example, if you want to become a pilot, you want to drive a very sophisticated plane, they cannot, experiment with a very costly plane and you go crash it. No. So first they create a virtual reality, a situation where it is just like a plane. You sit down inside it and practice before you fly the real plane. Okay. So as far as science goes, scientists go, there is a reality and there's a virtual reality. And the purpose of virtual reality is to learn to manage the reality. That is, to fly the real plane, you first sit in the virtual reality, practice, and then drive the whole the real plane. So our creation is also a virtual reality. It is a place for us to do the experiments, learn, and then go. The universe is a university. We first learn here, and then go back to the spiritual world after learning. So science also confirms what our scriptures are saying. Our scriptures say creation is nothing but yoga nidra, Mahavishnu's dream. He is dreaming and this entire creation is done. In fact, Srishti, the word Srishti in Sanskrit means imaginary creation. Okay? So this is so this world which we call as real, from the Lord's point of view, this is his dream. So similarly, like what we have, virtual reality and reality, we say the virtual reality is not reality. That is virtual reality. Similar analogy we can see between what the Lord says, that he says is yoga nidra. It is his dream. So by studying creation, these are some of the ways by which we can start appreciating, as Mataji said, the greatness of God. So these are some of the thoughts by which there is a link between chapter 25 and chapter 26, from devotion to creation. I'll stop here. If there are any questions, we can answer. Thank you.
First of all, technology has got a great advantage. What we are talking today, everybody can hear in the whole world through the internet. Your lecture, your analysis, similarly, diseases like herpes zoster. If you read the article, October 2016, Freedom Digest, you give full information
Yeah. Ultimately, quality should come.
Because what you are asking by association, please give me service.
Mm.
So we are getting more into the past times.
Mm.
It would automatically be revealed. Now, knowledge means detachment.
Mm.
If we have got transcendental knowledge, naturally we will be detached.
Mm.
And we will be more interested in the service. So these are three points I got.
Thank you. Any other questions? Good question. Good question. Okay. What you're saying is correct. He says if you try to understand creation, is there a danger that you will not move towards devotion? Is that correct? Is that what you're saying? And he gives an example of the gopis saying that they don't know anything about creation, but they are devotion. It is true. What you're saying is true. There is a danger of getting too much analysis can become a dangerous thing for devotion. You're correct. But at the same time, see, we are in this material world. Okay, the gopis are there. We cannot compare with them. Okay, we cannot compare. We are conditioned souls. For us to appreciate Krishna's greatness, okay, there is the greatness of Krishna and there is the sweetness of Krishna. Greatness of Krishna will lead us to sweetness of Krishna. We are not yet qualified, at least I'm talking about myself, to really get the sweetness immediately. For me, sweetness comes through greatness. By appreciating Krishna in these various forms, by understanding creation, I appreciate the greatness of God. The faith in the scriptures, everything increases. So, at the same time, I agree there is a danger that if you get stuck up with only this one, then there is a danger. Okay. But yes, that is where the Guru and the Shastra and other Acharyas help, Prabhupada's help, will help us to move on. As Prabhupada says in this purport itself, it's a science of devotional service. And ultimately, if we should come, our goal is very clear that we want to develop love of Godhead. But these are all ways by which we come towards that. I don't know whether I answered your question. If Gopurudish Prabhu can answer that, can add something more. Did I answer your question? But I agree with you, there is a danger. That's why I said, knowledge should lead to devotion. Both are related. It is not only devotion. If you have only devotion without knowledge, it is a little dangerous. It's a little dangerous. Prabhupada gives an example of saying, the banana tree and the banyan tree. The banana tree, the roots have not gone deeper. It can be easily shaken.
Whereas the banyan tree, the roots have gone deep. That means knowledge-based devotion is anytime good, especially in difficult times. When things are good, everything is good. Devotion is very nice. When difficulties come, then we are getting shaken. At that time, knowledge will be the one which will help you to sustain that, to hold on to that faith. That's what I understand. Any other questions?
One more point about the technology advances. In lighter way, I'm just say, we want to know about your daughter's condition. She's so far away. We have to travel 13 hours to read Vrindavan. Now, with Skype, you can talk to her, you can ask her how she's doing and all that. So, it makes a lot of difference.
Thank
so,
you.
I think we have.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Okay. Trantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.